Hey folks, just a brief content note off the top. This episode is about consensual non-consent, so we will be touching on both real and role-played rape, coercion, manipulation, intoxication, that kind of stuff. So feel free to skip this one if that stuff is triggering or troublesome for you.
Welcome to the Dildorks, Storky Discourse on Sex, Dating, and Masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I wrote a book on kink, as some of you know, and I got a message the other day from a relative of mine who is very kinky, who was like, hey, I just got my copy of your book and flipped through it, and I saw that you have really everything in there, including CNC, and I was like, wow, okay, I was not expecting family member to start a conversation with me about CNC, but here we are. Who are you, friend?
Oh, it's always so fascinating to see which item is people's, like, even this.
Yeah.
Like, I... Because there's 101 things, and there are quite a few that you could be like, wow, you even got this one in there.
Yeah.
Interesting to see what stands out to people. I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a porn maker, and I play with, like, a lot of CNC. Like, I don't talk about it often as one of my core kinks, but it almost certainly is. Like, it's a big part of a lot of my play, or variants on the theme.
Mm-hmm. And by CNC, if you don't know, what we mean is consensual non-consent, which might sound like an oxymoron, but don't worry, we're gonna get into it. We'll help you understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Which actually kind of brings me to my first question when I wanted to talk about this. I figured it would be helpful to start out by just kind of defining what it is and what it can look like. Like, is it just a fancy way of saying rape play without having to say the word rape, or is there more to it than that?
Yeah, I had thought for a long time that it literally was just role-playing rape, and then I learned a lot more about what it actually is. So basically, yeah, the two main ways that I hear CNC discussed are, first of all, in the context of rape play, which is like role-playing the idea of being raped. So there's many different ways to do sort of like a rape fantasy type of scene. There is the sort of traditional stranger danger, random person like attacks you and whatever. And then there's kind of more like insidious or subtle ways of doing it, like coercion through drugs or alcohol or psychological manipulation. But basically all of this is role play. Like all of this is the kind of thing that you would pre-negotiate. So of course, none of it is actually rape, as long as you're checking in and using your safe words and using your communication methods. But then the other way that I've heard it discussed is as a kind of like relationship dynamic, like the overall relationship is a CNC dynamic, meaning basically that the dominant or toppy person is trusted to behave within the limits of the submissive or bottomy person. And some of these people who I know like don't play with a safe word and just sort of rely on their dominant knowing them really well and not crossing those lines. But some of them, it's like the turn on is that some of their lines are going to be crossed. And this, I would say, is like not for beginners to kink. Like I would say, oh, you have an interest in DS. Let's immediately switch into a 24/7 CNC dynamic. Like this is not something that even I would feel comfortable doing at my level of expertise. Partly just because it's not my kink, to have my boundaries stepped over or to create the illusion of boundaries being pushed through or whatever. But I do know some people who make it work. Do you know of any other kind of like definitions of CNC?
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, first of all, it was interesting to me when I started to explore ideas of this beyond just like things that feel aggressive, right? Like actually yelling no or fighting back or things like that. Because playing with like ideas of coercion and things like that are tends to be where I tend to play with this, or in like realm of like intoxicants and things like that. But I think that also just came with like a broadening of my understanding of what, like, non-consent in reality looks like. Because that is the boogeyman these days that I have been told to be afraid of when I was growing up as a teenager, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, CNC doesn't even always have to be about sex. Like, you can absolutely have, like, a beating that plays like a CNC scene, that is someone struggling to get away from being hit and, like, not wanting to, you know, quote, not wanting to take the pain, right? So you can absolutely, quote-unquote, force people to do all kinds of kinky things.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a thing that I've been really fascinated by lately, and I think for me, what's interesting about exploring that is I am a person who, like, people in general seem to want to be nice to. And if I express distress, often it seems to be a cause for people to do things. And there's something that seems really, like, powerful and appealing about being able to just express distress and live in distress and have other people be like, that's tough for you. We're going to help you get you through this, but, like, you still got to get through this is the thing. So, like, sorry, we're here with you, but you're doing it, you know? And that has been a particular, like, angle on CNC that has been interesting to me, as well as, like, in kinky ways, because I want mean people to make me take mean things. That sounds fun. And in, like, self-development ways, because I'm like, no, that actually touches on some shit that I should probably practice. That's neat. That's, I should maybe explore some of that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You said so much there that I want to respond to. I did want to say, like, if you are a kinkster who has not done CNC, probably one of the times that you've heard it talked about is in discussions of safe words, because often when we talk about safe words and sort of teach, like, kink communication 101 and talk about safe words, we'll say, like, a reason to have a safe word rather than just saying no or stop is if saying no or stop as part of the scene is, like, part of what's hot to you about it. And, like, I know people who have done things like that who maybe would not consider themselves to have been doing CNC, but, like, that's basically what that is. And to be clear, like, there are people who play without safe words because they're not doing CNC and they know that they're not doing it, and they know that no or stop will be respected, and that's fine. But the other thing you said about, like, what was the last thing you said about saying no, or, like, the
being able to sit in distress and just, like, endure it without feeling like everyone's gonna try and fix a thing?
Yeah, I think that that's, like, one of the things about CNC that I find really fascinating on, like, a non-sexual level even, is, like, the necessity of practicing and sitting with hearing or giving a no, and either having that no be respected or, like, not having it be respected, and just, like, seeing what that feels like. And that's one of the things I talk about in my book in the section about consensual non-consent, because I think, like, if you have a fantasy about doing CNC, one of the hardest parts is, like, getting over that initial barrier of, like, we're so uncomfortable hearing no, like, as we should be generally in the world. Like, if you're having sex with someone and they say no, you should be attuned to that. You should be listening to that. It should give you a feeling, because typically you should stop when someone says that. But you do have to overcome that emotional hurdle to do CNC. And so one of the things I suggest in my book is just an exercise of, like, ask your partner if you can do something and have them say no. And, like, do that a few times and just see how you both feel. Which is kind of adapted from exercises I've done in therapy, where it's like, I'm so deeply uncomfortable saying no in certain situations because I think people won't like me or something. And it can be really helpful to just practice. Like, if someone says, can I give you a hug? And you say no. And then you just resist the urge to say anything else. Like, it's really hard.
It really is. And, like, it does seem odd to be talking about CNC as something that, like, helps you say no, because often, like, when you're talking about those exercises, you're like, yeah, it's really powerful to say your no and have it be respected. And, like, that's a really great exercise to do with people who you are going to explore CNC things with. For me, often one of my fears around not necessarily saying no, but just expressing displeasure or discomfort, even if it's mild or whatever, is that I am suddenly creating an obligation for everyone around me to do something about it, which is, like, not true, first of all, and second of all, makes it hard to say those things. So for me, exploring this and being like, no, I'm going to genuinely express displeasure. I would like to explore a thing that feels unpleasant to me. And like, I'm going to actually be vocal about what I am experiencing and that it is unpleasant. And I'm going to be loved and cared for while I do that. And I'm not going to change anyone else's day. They're still gonna, they had a plan to be here to hurt a cute boy, and they're gonna still hurt that cute boy. Sorry, that's, you know. And, like, I think something about that is, like, really powerful and a cool thing that kink can allow you to experience. So of some of those genres are, I know I talked a little bit about the types that I enjoy and the things that are appealing to me. I'm curious if there are types of CNC that you engage with or enjoy playing with.
Yeah, I've never done, like, a full-on rape scene. I think it's just, like, you know, it's mildly hot to me sometimes to contemplate, but it's never been hot enough that I wanted to, like, put myself through the emotional rigor of actually doing one. But I think that the place where I most often see CNC showing up in my fantasies is in medical play, or as we were discussing recently, like, not quite the alien abduction fantasy that we were talking about, but like the idea of someone examining me in a medical type way, whether or not they're like actually a legitimate doctor character or they're kind of like they have evil intentions, whatever.
But that kind of clinical vibe.
Yeah, because I think that's a situation in my real life where I've had experiences that sort of felt emotionally the way CNC can sometimes feel, where it's like, you know that really you can't get out of it. Or at least if you do get out of it, then you'll have to like come back another time and have the procedure done again. Like, it's just kind of necessary. So it's in your best interest sometimes to just sort of like muscle through it. And so I think that does it for me because it's a setting where it feels like relatively normal for me to have to like push myself to do something that doesn't feel entirely comfortable. I also am into the kind of stuff that you talk about with regards to like maybe teenagers and one of them is like pressuring the other one to have sex. Like, that to me is like feels tamer and emotionally safer than a full-on rape fantasy in the violent sense, maybe because like I've been through experiences like that. I think many of us have, of like people trying to coerce us to have sex, and like there can be something empowering about reclaiming a situation that previously was so disempowering and making it into something that is ultimately consensual.
And something that I pair with that and also just play with a lot on its own is intoxicants as well, which like plays into some of the stuff we were talking about with sleepy sex, which like not always CNC, but it's also not CNC is the thing. So like the things I play with sleepy sex tends to blur the line with the things I play with intoxicants or even just intoxicant role plays, and things like that, which tends to blur into like the kinds of role plays I play with in CNC.
I did want to also bring up, there's a theory about, this is controversial, but there is a longstanding theory that like one of the reasons why rape fantasies are so common, particularly for women, is that female sexuality is so like suppressed and stigmatized in our culture that there is something empowering or freeing to some people about like having the sex that you actually want being quote unquote forced on you, so that in the fantasy you don't really have to take agency or take ownership of your desires or like act on those desires yourself. It's just sort of like, well, it happened to me, like I didn't, and thereby you avoid like the accusations from others or even from your own mind that you're like a slut or something for being for having sexual desires and going after them. There's like a lot of debate about whether that's like an accurate theory of why rape fantasies are so prevalent. I don't know, I think it's an interesting thought, and like I often think about like whether my submissive fantasies are really my fantasies or just a reflection of like me being too lazy or anxious or scared to like actually say what I want and like own that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that it's really one or the other. I think that it's sometimes one is sometimes the other, and usually it's a blend, but I don't know. It's interesting to think about. I don't know how much stock I put into that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think when I hear things like that, I'm like, yeah, that's definitely true of some people who are into this, I'm sure. You know, like, I think that, I don't know, there are so many paths to so many kinks.
Yeah.
That, like, I'm like, yeah, that all sounds accurate to me, probably, for, you know, certain people in certain realities. I don't know, maybe also me in some places. I don't know, you know, like, but probably not at this point.
Probably not.
I'm into so much weirder shit than just getting fucked at this point. If I'm going to be ashamed and forced to do something, it's going to be much filthier, and I ain't talking about it on this show. Anyway, I got more questions.
Go right ahead.
When we're talking about, when you're talking about engaging in this type of play, it's obviously a much edgier type of play. I was curious what... I don't know, your vetting process looks like for engaging in something like this with someone. How do you know you're comfy playing with CNC with someone?
Yeah, I don't really do kink with randos anymore, unless it's like a kink I've done so many times that I'm like really accustomed to negotiating for it and it's pretty straightforward, like impact. I don't think I would do CNC with someone I had met recently. I think that this is like only within the realm of long-term partners for me, because it's like there are so many possible reactions that could come up that I feel, for me at least, that I would want a partner to know me in my entirety rather than just how I tend to respond and behave in sexy or kinky situations. Because with this stuff, we're getting into psychological territory that really sits outside of those areas for many of us. So I want my partner to be able to recognize when I'm triggered or when I've like completely frozen up and gone nonverbal. And like, I don't really trust a person I've met recently to be able to do that. But if I was going to try to vet somebody, I think that, one of the screening questions we often recommend would be really useful here, which is, what's your experience with partners safe wording in the past? Like what happened and what did you do? Because if someone plays with CNC to the extent that they are good at doing so, as a top at least, I would expect that safe words have come up before and that they've had to deal with them. Like, I think that there's probably a higher incidence of safe wording in CNC versus many kinks we would consider maybe tamer or more common. And so, yeah, I'm interested in knowing, like, first of all, do they view safe wording as like a normal part of CNC, or do they view it as like, you know, a disaster or a rarity, which is like not ideal for this? And also, like, how do they react to that? Do they take it very personally? Do they get very upset by it? Or do they see it again as like pretty normal, par for the course with this type of play? And then what do they do? So, yeah, I think that would be an important question. What do you think? Because you do much more of this sort of like pickup play for intense kink stuff than I do.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't do a CNC thing as like, as I am saying this, my first scene with Ash was a CNC scene, but we had had a great many conversations and et cetera that's prior to that. But I would not like pick up play a CNC scene with someone. I wouldn't meet someone that night and then have this scene with them. For me, it doesn't need to be like a long-term partner, like someone that I, you know, considering living with, or like, you know, like day-to-day capital P partner. However, they do need to be someone that I've played with a couple of times, someone that I've done things that maybe feel a little edgy with, right? Like someone that's beaten me and gotten me kind of close to my limits, right? Or someone, they absolutely need to be acquainted with subspace version of me. Mm-hmm. Like, they need to have gotten me spacey a couple of times and hung out with, like, whatever flavor of little spacey me they had and, like, taken good care of me in that time. Mm-hmm. Ideally, I need to have said no to them about something a couple of times. And seen how that went.
Mm-hmm.
That's really big and helpful for me. Even it, as simple as them being like, you into this thing? Nah. Oh, okay. Like,
that's such a good point.
Three or four of those alone is.
Yeah. Like, that's so important. I've definitely had partners in the past who I felt like I couldn't say no to them. And it's like not necessarily something I would have noticed unless it was pointed out to me, because it was like a people pleaser tendency where, like, instead of saying no when I wanted to say no, I might say, well, like, I guess I can make that work, or like, that's totally fine. Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you. I think that to do this kind of heavy play, you need to examine those behaviors and divest yourself of them with this person if it's going to work at all, because you're going to need to be able to communicate.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned talking about asking for a time someone safe worded, which I really love as a like vetting question for this kind of play. I'm curious if there are any other questions that you find really important when negotiating this kind of play, whether with a new partner or a long-term partner.
Mm-hmm. I would first want to know, like, have they done CNC before? It is just really emotionally difficult, so having had some kind of experience with it is useful, but it's also just useful to know if they haven't, because then you know that there might be extra emotional hurdles to deal with. I would also want to know, this is our perennial favorite question to ask people, why are you into this? Like, what is hot to you about it? There are answers that people could give me there that could potentially be worrying. So that's definitely something that I would listen carefully to their answers. I had a partner once who was kind of into like CNC DS dynamics, and he said, like, my greatest turn on is like, quote unquote, forcing people to do things that secretly they really want to do. And I was like, that's a great answer. Not that that has to be everyone's answer, but that to me signaled that we were in sync in terms of what we liked about this idea. I mean, I would want to check in about safe words, like, do you use safe words? What safe word do you use? Which ones do you like? Because there are some people, as I said, in the CNC subculture who prefer to play without safe words, and that's not something I'm personally comfy doing. If you are playing without safe words, by the way, watch this video, which I'll link in the show notes, from Spanking University. Princess Callie May did a video about how to play without safe words that is just like really, really exhaustive and helpful in terms of workarounds and whatnot. But yeah, definitely get on the same page about all the communication tools that you know you're going to be relying on, because those are important. What do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, for me, it's definitely about talking about the why you're into this. But also, I'm a story nerd, right? I want to get into, like, why are the characters here? Like, what what kind of feeling are you trying to get out of the scene? I'm going to ask lots of questions about getting to kind of the core flavor of the scene, if you will. A big one I've used for this is, what are you afraid is going to happen if you don't listen to me? Like, we're setting up this scene that you're listening to me. That's the game that we're playing. You're listening to me. You're doing what I say. Like, I'm going to force you to do the thing. But what are you afraid of happening if I don't force you to do the thing?
Like, what are the stakes?
Yeah, there's a difference between I'm going to hurt you and I'm not going to want to hang out with you anymore.
Right.
Right? Because those are both CNC scenes, and they can both be, like, fun and pushy and things, and they're gonna feel very different to the bottom.
Yeah, that's such an interesting point to me as an improv nerd, because in improv that is referred to as stakes, and the assumption usually is that the stakes in an improv scene should be as high as you can possibly make them. So, like, in a CNC improv scene, it might be like, well, I've never done this before. And also my mom might come home in the middle of it. Like, I don't know, like something really ridiculous like that. But I think that the point that you're making is so good because in life, and unlike an improv scene, higher stakes isn't necessarily going to be the best thing. Like, especially if you're new to CNC, it might induce greater panic or whatever. So really, maybe the stakes are as low as like, I don't know, the kids at school might find out that I'm a slut, or even like,
Am I going to pass this class?
Right. Yeah. Like really low. Am I going to be personally disappointed in myself? Something like that, rather than like, you're going to lose your college scholarship and your whole life will be ruined.
Right. Versus like, oh no, I'm going to be worried that like, I'm a good boy who shouldn't be doing things like this. Right. And for me, it's like, it is about the order of scale of the stakes, sure. Like, but it also is just going to change the entire tone of the scene, right? Being afraid of if someone is going to hurt me, I am scared. I am afraid. I am, like fearful feels different from intimidated or nervous or, like, flustered or, like, a little bit off kilter, right? So it is like it's going to change the entire tone of the scene, and it's going to help you to make really informed decisions around what you're kind of creating for your partner. And where on kind of, I don't know, the spectrum of discomfort they want to sit.
Now I'm just thinking about a medical play scene where the doctor would be like, you have to hold still and stop squirming or I'm going to tell your parents that you're a bad girl. And I'm just like, ooh.
Oh my God.
Strikes shivers through my body.
And see, the thing is, those stakes are probably, you know, may not sound that high, but they seem like they feel so high.
Yeah. You have to think about what feels high to you. And for me, the very thought of that makes me shudder to my very soul.
Exactly. So, I mean, we're talking a lot about calibrating intensity and discussing your goals and your motivations and how you're expecting to feel before the scene starts. But obviously that is not necessarily a thing that we can always rely on to be consistent. We're playing with some heavy shit and things can be unpredictable. So I'm curious if you have any tips for kind of staying in touch and staying in communication in the moment, other than just a safe word. To, like, I don't know, make sure you're still on the same page. These scenes can go for like 20, 30 minutes. I'm too anxious to go that long without making sure that my scene's going okay.
Yeah, well, my top tip for this is something that came from you. Because, yeah, in a typical scene where limits might be reached, my usual go-to method would be to have the top check in and say, like, what color are you? To remind me to say green, yellow, or red, which I find helpful from both sides of the slash. But in the context of a role play, and particularly a role play where, like, the discomfort and the coercion are, like, the whole point, I think what works better is what you've talked about, which is sort of, like, safe word type phrases, but they're, like, coded to make sense in the context of the scene. And you have to agree on them in advance and probably like practice them and, you know, make sure that they're really drilled into your head. But the ones that you've talked about in the context of a coercion scene, if Ash wanted you to go harder, like to be scary or to be more intense, then they would say, I'm not a little boy, you know. But if they wanted you to back off, like if they were hitting a yellow, basically, then they would say, you're scaring me. And I love those as examples because I think that those are like very clear and also things that would come up in that situation and also not super hard to remember when you want to use them. Like they are kind of, they're pretty natural for that moment. And yeah. I think it's good to think in advance about what those might be. It is a little harder, you know, than traditional safe words. And there's also no rule that says that you can't break character in the middle of a scene to check in. I would rather do that if either person is worried that they're not going to remember their safe words. But yeah, I think that having those coded phrases is really fun, particularly if you are into like really staying in character the entire time.
Yeah, and what I spent a little while trying to figure out those phrases, and what I liked about them is that they are just true,
mm-hmm.
right? You're scaring me does mean, oh, you're being too scary.
Yeah.
Right? You know, they are, I'm not a little boy is a thing you say when you're trying to be like, you can rough me up a little bit more, right? Like that, like, mm-hmm. I can take more than this, right? Like that, but they're specific enough that they're, once we've had the conversation, probably not just going to fall out of their mouth on accident.
Mm-hmm.
Something else that I find helpful, that again requires a little bit of conversation in advance, is a question I stole from Midori that I adore, that I saw in one of her workshops, where she says, to talk about what do you feel like when things are going well, mm-hmm. and what do you feel like when things are going poorly?
Mm-hmm.
Because having that little bit of context for your partner, being able to say, this is what I'm going to look like if I'm having a good time, mm-hmm. if I'm enjoying it, I'm going to want to be fighting back a lot,
mm-hmm.
means that even if I, like, if I'm just a little nervous and I don't quite want to stop things to check in, mm-hmm. I can think back into that moment and say, they gave me the little key in the corner of the map. They said struggling version of them is mm-hmm. their favorite version of this scene, and they're doing the struggle thing that they said that they would like to do.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the favorite version of their scene. The flowchart says so. It must be true. I can keep doing the thing. Right? So you can tell your partner in advance the clues that they need to mm-hmm. reaffirm that you're having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can look for those clues when they don't quite want to ask you out loud with their face, because mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe it's busy or something.
Mm-hmm. I would say also, like, if your CNC scene is going to involve things that you know make you nonverbal, whether that's pain or hypnosis or whatever, it really might be best to just stick to simple, safe words rather than try to get to creative or indirect with it, because there are some times when I'm just not going to be able to say anything other than red. Like, it's just not going to happen. And some of the people I know who are in a CNC dynamic do really deep hypnosis as like pretty standard part of their relationship, and I would imagine it's pretty hard in that, or it is pretty hard, at least for me, in that state to say sentences at all. Like, it might be easier to even have like a signal you can do with one hand or something like that.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. And the cool thing about a signal too is that it can be done outside of, like, without breaking character as well. That's another thing that you can do fairly easily.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to, you know, preserve character as well as something that's more accessible in those times.
Yeah. I need you here tonight. This week's episode of The Dildorks is sponsored by HustlerHollywood.com. They have an amazing selection of vibrators, dildos, strap-ons, anal toys, bondage toys, lingerie, lubes, and more. And we picked a couple of things that are somewhat CNC related to talk to you about today, because they have a pretty wild selection of very interesting kink implements. What did you grab, Bex?
So I'm looking here at the Master Series Petite Stainless Steel Ass Lock, which is really the only time I've looked at any toy named Petite. But
wow. I did.
It's really just, I have a brand and I stick to it, and that brand is fisting. But the thing is, I wanted to pick the ass lock because something we actually haven't talked about much yet is that chastity and orgasm control and things like that can play into the CNC vibe, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can whine and complain and beg and do all of the things you want to do to come, and I can be like, no, sorry, I have your ass locked up, you can't use it. Tell me as much as you want to use it, I'm not gonna let you. And it has a fun energy for that. So I thought this would be a cute accessory to go with that kind of scene. Anyway, lock your partners up. And it will make me happy. I
mean, the hilarious thing is that it does say petite, but it is 2 inches wide, which is wider than the butt plugs that I tend to use.
Yeah, no, that's chunky.
Yeah, it's pretty big. I will link that in the show notes if anyone is interested. The thing I picked is similar but different. I'm looking at the Kink Industries anal hole spreader. I love when things are called just what they do.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah. Anal hole spreader. It says that this is meant to slowly train your anus to allow for larger toys, but like, I think that in a CNC context, this would be more about like the discomfort of actually holding the hole open. And it's very medical play. It's very much like when someone gets this in you, they can have their way with you. And it has a terrifyingly medical aesthetic to it.
It really does.
I'm not even into this type of play, anal hole spreading play, but like looking at it, I'm like, huh, I could see it. I could see it.
That's how I feel about anything that scares me.
Yeah, so we will link both of those in the show notes. And Hustler Hollywood has generously offered our listeners a 15% off coupon code that you can use to buy all your kinky and sexy shit on their site. So if you go to hustlerhollywood.com, you can use the code JUICE15, that's JUICE15, all lowercase, for 15% off your order. Thank you, Hustler Hollywood.
So I had one last question for you before we move into listener questions. I wanted to talk a little bit about aftercare, because obviously it's important for all types of kink scenes, but particularly when we're playing with really heavy stuff like this. And I'm curious if your aftercare for any CNC-type play looks any different from the aftercare for the rest of the kink that you do.
Yeah, one thing I hear a lot from people who do CNC is that it can be particularly emotionally difficult for the top because they're doing something that looks on the surface incredibly unethical or violent or like, you know, in direct opposition often to their own actual values.
It's a complicated desire to have.
Yes, absolutely. And some people are into the idea of playing the bad guy while simultaneously feeling really bad about themselves when they play the bad guy. And so I think that this is a kink where it's particularly beneficial to have some kind of protocol in place for discussing the scene afterward and what you liked about it. And for me, often that might look like immediately after the scene, like during cuddles and other standard aftercare stuff, like rehydrating and whatnot, just being like, that was so good. I liked that. Like, I can't be very articulate in those moments, but doing my best to say something reassuring, like, thank you for doing that. And then probably within a few days after that, like having an actual sit down conversation where you go through it a little more granularly of like, this part was great. This part was a little bit scary. Maybe dial that back next time. This part was not quite enough. Maybe dial that up next time. But just in general, giving a lot of reassurance. I think that the emotional aspect of this kink is like really, really intense no matter which side of the slash you're on. So I would lean heavier on the side of the emotional part of aftercare, which for me is often just like a lot of reassurance that I actually did like it and I actually was consenting. What do you think?
Yeah, agreed. I think the communication afterwards is incredibly important. And in addition to that reassurance, I think it's important that those conversations be talking about, like you were saying, which the intensity level of the different things you experienced. What were you thinking about when I did this thing? How difficult was this for you to take? How intense did XYZ item feel? How intense did that feel to do to me? Right? Because you want to be calibrating your scales as much as possible. They don't need to look the same, but you do need to be able to like recognize that, you know, my 7, you put it through the conversion thing and it pops out as a 4 for you. And that's an important information to know.
Right. Yeah, I think a numerical scale is really, really useful here because especially if you're new to something like this with this particular person, like, yeah, you can be totally calibrated wrong. Like maybe when you pulled out that scary dentistry implement, like I was at an 8 out of 10 on the terror scale, and maybe my partner thought I was like doing fine at a 3 or vice versa. Like, you can't always totally read a person's reactions. I think particularly with like fear, sometimes there's a tendency to like freeze up so that it's not actually clear that you're terrified at that moment. Kind of in a survival strategy sort of way. And so, yeah, I think a numerical scale could be really useful there in the debrief.
Right. Especially if you are a person who's, you know, fear response is freeze or fawn.
Yeah.
Right. That is not necessarily going to come across easily to someone who doesn't know you particularly well.
Yeah. And on the topic of that, I'm like big into nervous system education the last couple of years because like learning about it has been so helpful to me in terms of like therapy and trauma recovery and stuff. But I do think if you're doing any kind of CNC, fear play, rate play kind of stuff, it would be a good idea to study up on those states like fight, flight, freeze, fawn, submit, those types of states and what therapists recommend for easing out of them or helping with them in the moment, because it is very possible, especially if you're a trauma survivor, that you might be triggered mid-scene. It has happened to me. It is not a fun time. I tend to go into freeze state, which for me is like very terrifying and also often very terrifying for my partner because like it's not immediately evident from the outside what's going on. So there's many different things that can help with that. Some of the things that help me in freeze state are like getting close to like an open window, like fresh air, cold air, maybe holding an ice cube because the cold sensation. But like there's other things also, like look around and like name 5 things you can see and 4 things you can, I don't know, you know.
5 things you can see, 4 things you can hear, 3 things you can feel, 2 things you can smell, 1 thing you can taste.
There you go. Yeah, it's good to know that shit. Another thing my therapist told me is to get up and stand with your hands against a wall and like push against the wall as hard as you can to feel like the strength of your own body. It's not that you're necessarily going to like stop in the middle of a CNC scene to do all of this stuff, but if you get to a point where like one of you is feeling sufficiently triggered that you want to maybe come out of that scene or at least take a pause, then some of these things would be good to have in your tool belt to know about.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay. We got so many listener questions about CNC. Really good questions.
Yeah.
One listener was wondering how to help a partner who seems nervous to initiate it and who constantly checks in to see if it's okay, even after being reassured multiple times that this person will let him know through the agreed upon method. I think that something that's useful for this is to have the equivalent of a green safe word in the scene. And it would probably have to be coded, as we were discussing earlier, and like, you know, attuned to the particular content of the scene. But like, for example, if I was in a medical play scene, maybe my green safe word would be like, I'm really glad I'm getting this issue checked out. I've been worried about it for a while. Or like, or like, you have really great bedside manner, doctor, or something like that.
I mean, honestly, even just if it's not your honorific, just calling them doctor, because you could slip that into the end of a sentence.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Right.
I think that, green safe word can be great for nervous tops because, as we were discussing in the praise episode recently, like it's essentially praise for your dominant or for your top. And it's also essentially just being like, I'm cool. Everything's okay. Don't need to worry about anything. It's all good. And you might need to do it more often than you would ideally like to, at least at first. But I think that building up confidence in the beginning can sometimes lead to like, you know, smoother scenes with fewer check-ins later on. So it's a good thing to do. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I agree. I think this, and I'm also going to bring us back to what I was talking about earlier with like, what do you look like when you're having a good time? Because I think it's really great that you have an agreed upon system and you say, if something goes wrong, I will use this system. Like that's great. And if your partner only has bad symbols to look for, it's easy for them to sit up there and just be waiting for the bad sign. Like, there's it seems like something's wrong. They're going to do the bad sign any minute, right? Mm-hmm. But if they also have indicators that something good is happening, mm-hmm. they can shift their focus to, like, oh, they're not doing the bad thing. Oh, and they're doing these three things they said mean they're having a good time,
mm-hmm.
right? So it may not even be as explicit as having, like, a green safe word or something like that. It can just also be, like, you know that sound I make? I make that sound when you're, like, fucking me real deep. Like, and if I make that sound while we're doing a CNC scene, it's still a good sound, right? Mm-hmm. You remember that sound, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that can be particularly helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I also think in terms of initiating, it could be helpful to have – this is something that some folks in the Discord were actually talking about in terms of sleepy sex.
Mm-hmm.
But have an indicator that means now is an okay time to initiate.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean you are now initiating. That means you are opening the door and waiting for your partner to force their way in if that's the game that you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
So having, you know, they were talking about sleeping naked, right? Mm-hmm. But even having, like, particular pieces of jewelry or particular, like, you know, when something is out on the nightstand, it means I'm down for you to be a little pushy tonight and mm-hmm. do a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have some sort of nonverbal cue that allows it to still feel like an illusion, right? And allows them to still feel like they are making the choice to initiate, like they are still starting. But they know if they choose to initiate, they're going to get a yes.
Mm-hmm.
They already know the answer in advance, and that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, I love the suggestion, and I also think that you can do, like, a verbal signal if something more direct is your style, whether that be, like, oh, I'm really hoping that I get to see my doctor later today, wink, wink, mm-hmm. or whatever. That can be good, too.
I think you should also probably consider talking in more detail about what you enjoy about mm-hmm. bottoming to this type of play,
mm-hmm.
right? Someone who is nervous or constantly checking in, they may not fully understand what you're enjoying about the experience, right? They may not, if they can't empathize about why it's fun for you,
mm-hmm.
then it's probably harder for them to imagine it being fun for you, which is probably going to encourage their anxiety, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, I also think that this would be a good situation to do some of the sort of, like, practicing saying and hearing no that we were talking about earlier, because as a nervous top myself, a lot of my nervousness comes from the idea that maybe my partner wants to say no or, like, would say no at this moment but feels unable to for whatever reason, whether it be subspace or wanting to please me or whatever. And so if you do drills together where, like, they reach a limit or you pretend to reach a limit together and you say no or you say your safe word, like, just prove to your partner over and over again that you will safe word if you need to. I think that that can help a lot. And also just the reminder of, like, if I'm not safe wording, it means everything's fine. I think that that's pretty backwards for how most of us think about our interactions in general out in the world. And it's kind of something that you have to, like, unlearn in order to do CNC. But I do think mm-hmm. practicing it could potentially be helpful.
Yeah, I agree.
We got a question about, quote unquote, free use CNC, which, as far as I understand, just basically means that you're in a effectively 24/7 DS CNC dynamic where, like, one person is free to, quote unquote, use the other person at any mm-hmm. time sexually. Mm-hmm. Sort of reminds me of, like, Melina Williams-Haas has talked about having a similar dynamic with her husband where, like, she's basically available around the clock, not only for, like, personal assistant duties, but for sexual stuff as well. Mm-hmm. And I definitely know a lot of people who have this fantasy from both or either side of the slash. How to explore it safely. I mean, basically all the same stuff that you would want to have in place for any kind of 24/7 dynamic. And we've done episodes about that. But, like, you should have safe words. You should check in pretty frequently, I think, like once a week or once every couple weeks about, like, what's working mm-hmm. lately, what's not. And you should also discuss and have contingency plans for times when free use is not necessarily the most practical thing. Like, maybe one of you is on your period and one of you is like not into period sex. You got to have a way of communicating that. Or maybe, you know, one of you is having vaginal pain. Like, what are you going to do if stuff like that comes up? Just remember that, like, even if the fantasy is literally free use 24/7, like, it can still be hot in your head, even if you're not doing it exactly that way in real life. Like, real life is real life. It's not fantasy. And so, you know, you can still have that dynamic, even if you have to make adaptations sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so important to negotiate those things and discuss ahead of time what are the situations in which we don't necessarily expect this to, like, free use to actually be free use. What are some of the scenarios where I will be available for use, but neither of us would like me to be used in those times? And how am I going to communicate that to you? I think it's also helpful to talk about not only, like, what those times are, or, like, if there are times when you're feeling emotionally like you don't want to be available for free use, you can, you know, of course, not be available for free use in those times. You can't just leave it there. You have to, well, how are you going to communicate that? Well, what is that going to look like? Well, what are those conversations going to look like? Right? If you are a person for whom free use is hot, and you are, like, which presumably you are if you're engaging in this kind of play, you want to make sure you've had several conversations so that the person who is being used or doesn't feel like a failure when they're not available for use. A thing I talk a lot about when I'm talking about my submissives is if I break my favorite toy, I can't keep playing with my favorite toy. And, like, all the toys I have, like, screens and feedback and tell me what is happening. And if, you know, even if it has a motor, I can listen if it's doing a wonky thing, right? Like, I need feedback to know if my toy is struggling so I can make sure that I'm not near breaking it, so that I can take care of it and fix it and maintain it, right? If you are an object that is free for me to use, I still need you to give me that feedback when my object that I'm using needs maintenance, so that I can take as good care of that as I do the rest of the shit that I own, you know?
Yeah, as the bottom in that situation, I think it's also useful to communicate when, like, maybe one orifice or one particular type of sex is going to be difficult but not off the table entirely, just so that someone can adjust. So if it's like, you know, my vag is kind of sore today, it's still open for free use, but just so you know, it is going to be more painful or whatever, because, like, maybe it's hot to you both that it's more painful, or maybe it's less hot or whatever, but, like, that's good information to know. I would also say, like, as much as some bottoms do find it ridiculously hot to be available for free use and to just be used that way, I would say probably most of them need a little something extra to feel like they're getting what they want out of that experience, whether that be reassurance that they're doing a good job or physical pleasure of their own, or, like, they get to use a vibrator while someone's fucking their mouth, or, like, whatever it is, like, figure out what the incentive is for both people and make sure that they're both getting what they want, because it may not just be as simple as the free use being the only thing that's, you know, exciting and necessary for them both.
Yeah. And this is also the kind of dynamic that I wouldn't engage in with someone that I don't know, like, particularly well, and that is particularly good at reading me and understanding, like, my moods on a given day, right? This is, if we're talking about vetting again, part of my vetting process would just be, like, is this a person that has a really good intuition on what's going on inside me that day, right? Like, is this the kind of person who knows when to, like, push back a little bit on a bad mood and, like, make me get over it and get through it versus, you know, put me in a little bean bag with a big thing of ice cream and a big blanket, right? Like, I can look grumpy and some days I need my ass kicked and some days I don't, right? And the people who know the difference between those two things are the kinds of people that I would trust to do a more free use kind of dynamic, mm-hmm. because they are also the kind of people that can look at me and be like, he don't want a dick today, but it's going to be good for him. Versus, I should keep my dick in my pants today, you know? There are better ways to care for him and, you know, whatever. And Obviously free use is, of course, also about the dominance enjoyment. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy fucking with my submissives when it would be good for them. I don't need to fuck with them when it would actively do them harm. That's less fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you want to do just like, you know, discrete time periods of free use rather than it being a 24/7 dynamic, which, by the way, is totally valid and does not mean that you're like less kinky or less whatever. Maybe you could do like when their collar is on, you can use them, or like when they're naked, you can use them, like whatever. Maybe naked isn't that great, because what if they're just trying to get out of the fucking shower and go to work? But like, you know, maybe there's some like symbolic thing that means now is the time and other times are not. I feel like in CNC communities, there can sometimes be this attitude of like, if you're not 24/7 and like all in, then you're not like doing it right, or you're not like a real kinkster or whatever. And that's bullshit. You should do what works for you and your partner or partners. Don't listen to any of that shit. It's not real and it's not nice.
And there's something so hot about having like designated times where a thing is true, or mm-hmm. like communicating that now is an okay time for this to happen. Like, I, 1 year at camp, there was a group of folks running around camp bullying people, and they had little rainbow wristbands, and they handed them out to cute people that they saw, and they said, if and when you're wearing this wristband, my like gang of girl bullies can come bully you, and mm-hmm. we're gonna do that. But if you're not wearing the wristband, you're not available for that type of play. You're on your way to a class, or just got out of a scene, or fucking tired, whatever, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. And what I loved about that is that, like, any time I had the wristband on, I had just, like, a little bit, like, I was a little bit more on alert, and I just, like, I would notice it and be like, oh, gosh, what if one of those people are in this room right now? Have they seen me with my wristband on? Do they know? Right? Yeah. So there's just something fun about, like, even if you're not going to use that person today because you don't feel like it, or you're doing another thing or whatever, you're like, they're wearing their free use collar. I could be fucking them right now. I'm not gonna, because I'm the boss and I'm choosing not to fuck them, but I could be fucking them right now. That'd be hot if I was, though. Right?
It's fun. Yeah. It's like a green light. It's great.
Exactly. And it makes it a little bit special and a little bit shiny. And for me, as someone with ADHD who forgets about shit like this all the time, if I can literally any time fuck someone, it is less interesting than, oh, I could fuck them right now, but only right. We'll figure out a way to get this to like find time to fuck now. We can squeeze it into a thing and like sneak off into a corner and fuck or something. Like, mm-hmm. scarcity kind of thing. So mm-hmm. if you were like, wow, now's the time that I could free use, and even if I'm not gonna, that's really hot that I could.
Yep. Okay, I think that's all for today. We do have a bunch more CNC questions, so we might do a part two of this next week. If you have questions about CNC that you'd like us to answer the next week, then please send us an email, thedildorks@gmail.com. I have been Kate Sloan. I have a sex blog at girlyjuice.net. I have a book which has a CNC section in it, including more info on how to do it and what to try. You can order the book at 101kinkythings.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. And the other podcast I do sometimes is called Question Box. Where is your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing and information about my workshops at bextalksex.com. I have my full schedule of upcoming workshops available there. I also have a link to my Better Bottoming online course, which has a slightly longer version of the content in my Better Bottoming workshop that is available for download now. So you can just click online courses in the header and go see that. It's pre-recorded and real fancy. So I'd love for you to check that out. If you want to see my porn, you can go to @BillyLore on Twitter and follow all the links there to my many vids, Just Friends, Pocket Stars, etc. I'm quite good at promoing myself. There's also, I've been on Sex Panther for a couple weeks now, and I'm really enjoying it. So if you've ever wanted to sext me about all the filthy things you enjoy, the links are over at Billy Lore on Twitter, and we can do that as well. Together with the Dildorks, we're at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram and at thedildorks.com. To help us support the show and keep doing what we're doing, you can go to patreon.com/thedildorks to throw us a couple of bucks. At the $6 level, you will gain access to our exclusive Discord community for Dildorks fans and listeners. It's really fucking rad. We've got a lot of really cool folks in there, and I learn a lot. Like, y'all are really fucking clever. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to see that community grow. At the $12 level, you also get access to our exclusive Patreon-only bonus episodes, which is where you can hear the story about the alien sex roleplay that Kate mentioned earlier, among a great many other fun things.
Yeah, and I want to shout out our top-tier supporters who we mention every week on this show because we appreciate their support so damn much. I want to say hello to Amelia, Nat, Matthew, Stabitha Christie, and Gwen. Thank you so much. And thank you to all of our Patreon supporters. I totally agree about the Discord. It has been such a fun space.
I love it.
Also, should I get on Sex Panther? I just opened it up on my phone. It's so like, fun. Yeah, I don't know.
I quite enjoy it. I have someone that's been doing some real fun role plays with me, except he ran out of money before I got off the other day, and I was no. like, how do I live like this?
Thank you so much to the wonderful Proto Dome, whose song I Want You in My Bedroom graces this podcast every week. Thank you to Amy, who did our logo for us. Thank you to our sponsor for this episode, HustlerHollywood.com, where you can use the code JUICE15 for 15% off your order. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
Bye. They said bye at the end of the Bedpost podcast. I want you in the morning.
And there are lots of different ways to do that. I need to make a note to do a content warning.
Yeah. I said it twice and I was like, okay, here we go. We are into the CNC episode.
Rape, assault, coercion, type. Okay.
And yeah, I don't know. I lost my train of thought thinking about people hurting me. Anyway, we're on a podcast.
Yeah.
It's fine.
You said what you were going to say. That's great. That's all right.
It's fine. Anyway.